Hello. In previous audio snippets, we have been talking about the five branches of government as they should be defined. Our initial intention was to provide some additional thoughts, some minor comments about what we had said in the previous three audio snippets, even though we believe that in a sense the basic ideas of what the five branches are about have already been laid out. It seemed important to cover like little issues to tie loose ends here and there. So that was our intention for this audio snippet. But then something very interesting, or I don't know if the word interesting is the right word here, but something very impactful, let me put it that way, happened on the news. And I had shared that I really have no interest in my heart to continue sharing audio snippets about news events, because everything is now so... There's so much emptiness in the headlines, for lack of a better word. It's as if the story has been written, the book has been finished, and everything seems to just be a repetition of the same thing over and over again, because we in America, for all intents and purposes, are dead, and there's no waking up from it. And when the as we explained before, when conservatives crossed the Navalny line, that's how, what I call it, then it became evident that it's better not to even relate to them, because it's actually, it might actually be destructive to continue engaging with them. And by that, I mean, for example, me going to conservative websites to read headlines from there, because it's just the truth is so angry at them now, at a point of complete divorce and rejection, that there is no benefit in visiting their websites. So I said to myself, let me just forget about all the headlines and just focus on general principles and the things that need to be said regarding the past and regarding the future, because things in the present are just pointless. But this event that happened was so impactful that I began to reluctantly accept that this is what we had to talk about. I didn't really want to get into that. It's like, oh, it's just, what's the point? But over the week, over these few days, I've been kind of bombarded in my heart that I have to share this, even though I don't feel like it. It's not a question of what I feel like doing. It's a question of what needs to be done. And therefore, we are going to talk about this, this story. And I'm pretty certain that if you're listening to this recording at the time, around the time of the recording, that you will know or be very aware of this news story. So let me just jump to it. And as I share the story, you will, those who might know my personal story might know, or things personal things that I have shared on in these recordings might realize why it impacted me so deeply right from the get go when I read this read about this event for the first time. So let me go to there's so many things we want to share about this. I don't know if we'll be able to say it in one audio snippet, and I am not certain how we will say it. It feels like there's so much to say. I feel like I don't know where to start. But let's start at the beginning, as they always say, see how it flows, how it goes, and hopefully we'll be able to share what needs to be said. So I'm reading one of the many stories that have been posted on this event because it was so impactful. I'm reading this one. This is one from the day of the event, the 26th of March, 2024. That's when it was posted. It was posted on the Daily Mail. That's a website I visit now, along with the New York Post, the only two websites. And another one from the Express, express.co.uk, from the Express newspaper. It's a in the UK. And the Daily Mail doesn't count as a, quote, conservative website. It's not like the others that we have mentioned throughout these audio snippets. And neither is the New York Post. They sometimes bother me the way they describe certain things because they don't seem to know what they're talking about. But the thing is that the stench of conservatism is not on them. Of that recalcitrant conservatism bent on this task of rescuing the country by returning it to, quote, its traditional values and its conservatism, which is what led to precipitated the death of the country. And a lot of Christians are trapped in that movement. And it's a matriarchal movement at the end of the day that defied the truth, raised its fists at the truth and said, we will do it our way. And you don't tell us what to do because we know exactly what we're doing. Okay, so now I'm going to read the headline here. It says, doomed cargo ship Dolly was being piloted by a local crew who were trained to avoid obstacles in the Baltimore port. As it emerges, a 100,000-ton vessel lost control and propulsion moments before smashing into the bridge. It says an initial report found that propulsion may have caused the catastrophe. The crew warned that they lost control of the vessel shortly before the smash. And it says here, the vessel was piloted by a specialist crew trained to avoid impacts. So it says here, the cargo ship that smashed into the Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore overnight was piloted by a specialized crew trained to avoid obstacles at ports, it has been revealed. So now, as you may know, this is about the bridge that collapsed when one of its support beams was hit by this big, heavy ship that lost control and was just kind of being taken by the current, the river's current, and it went directly at the support beam. What a coincidence. Of all the places the ship could have hit, it hit the support beam. And I personally don't believe it was a terrorist attack or anything deliberate. I really, really don't think it from the evidence and everything that has been shared, it is clear that it's not, it was not intentional. But I find it very interesting. And I know it's not a coincidence that of all the places it could have gone through below the bridge, the ship chose to go straight towards the support beam. I know that's not a coincidence. And the bridge is called the Francis Scott Key Bridge, but for short, they call it the Key Bridge. I think they also call it the Beltway Bridge. I don't remember if I, in my childhood when I lived in Baltimore, if I was ever driven across that bridge. I don't remember. Maybe not. I have no idea. I have shared in some of the audio snippets, I grew up in Baltimore. I went to high school there. I graduated university, college there. And of all the places on earth that I could call a hometown, I would say Baltimore is my hometown. The closest thing to a hometown I ever had. And you could say New York is my has been my place of operation, where I've been operating. But in a sense, my origins, you could say, in many ways, come from Baltimore. So when I heard this story, it really impacted me. And I saw the video of, and many of you whom are listening to this, who are listening at around the time of this recording, may have seen the video. It's very impactful, literally and figuratively. You see the bridge, the ship hitting the support beam, and it's like it doesn't take like 20 minutes for the bridge to collapse. It's just boom, and the whole thing just comes tumbling down, and it makes me think, I don't know why, I just thought of the song that I was taught when I was in high school in Baltimore. In eighth grade, we had a music class, and one of the songs that they taught us, I don't know why, but it was the famous song that says, Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, Jericho, Joshua fought the battle of Jericho, and the walls came tumbling down. And that's kind of how it looked. It suddenly just collapsed, like it was made of sticks, of wooden sticks, and it just came down. Like nothing, like it was this flimsy little thing, and it is shocking to watch it, and it's saddening, you know, first because of my connection to Baltimore, and second because of all that it represents. So we'll be talking about all of that. It is not a coincidence that it happened, the date that it happened, how it happened, the ship that did it, the people who were on the bridge at the time of the collapse, the people who died, the temperature of the water, everything. I mean, it is just so amazing, the level of detail that's in that incident. That is so relevant and interconnected, and we'll try to talk about all these things as we go along here. So, it says here, the ship, a 948-foot-long dolly operated by Singaporean company Synergy Group, collided with a 1.2-mile bridge shortly after 1:26 a.m. as it left port. Again, here's where I really don't know where to start. We'll talk about the 948 here that's mentioned. Even the size of the ship is everything. It's just so interconnected and so relevant. The 948-foot-long dolly operated by a Singaporean company, and the fact that it was operated by a Singaporean company. The name of the company, Synergy Group, and there's another company related from Singapore to this ship that we'll talk about later. That's all interconnected. But let's start with the name of the bridge. Before going into talking about 948 and Singapore and all that, let's talk about the name of the bridge. The name of the bridge is the Francis Scott Key Bridge. And Francis Scott Key, at least in America, it's well known that he was the one who wrote the words to the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, the song that's played at the start of every baseball game and football game in America, you know, the song or the anthem that all these bastards have been kneeling. In this respect before every game and so forth. And Francis Scott Key and Baltimore are interconnected because, as some of you may know, the national anthem, the Star Spangled Banner, which was a poem, he wrote it as a poem, was inspired by the battle. I don't know if what the official name of the battle was. I don't know if it's the Battle of Fort McHenry or something, but the thing is that during the War of 1812, the British attacked Baltimore, and they attacked and the War of 1812 obviously was the war between skirmish or war between the United States and Britain, and the British attacked Baltimore, and they attacked Fort McHenry, which was the fort in Baltimore, And I've been there once. I remember once in my life during my time in Baltimore that I and my family visited Fort McHenry. But the thing is that he was watching, the British were attacking Fort McHenry, and he was beholding the whole incident and the fact that the American flag was still waving at the end of the battle is what inspired him to write the national anthem. So when you think of Baltimore, you think of many things, the Orioles and all that, but as you start going down the line, you start thinking of Fort McHenry, and you start thinking about Francis Scott Key and the national anthem. So Francis Scott Key and Baltimore are strongly integrated. So it's not a coincidence that they just would name a bridge after him. So now let's start talking about Francis Scott Key, that the name of the bridge itself and what it evokes and represents. So to do that, let's briefly go to we'll be going here to the Wikipedia article on Francis Scott Key. Let me read from the top here. Francis Scott Key, born the 1st of August, 1779. And even that is and we'll mention that we might forget about it forget about mentioning this detail later, but keep it in the back of your mind, the year that he was born. He was born in 1779. And we will mention something related to that number later on. August 1st, 1779, that's when he was born, and he died on January 11th, 1843. He was an American lawyer, author, and poet from Frederick, Maryland, best known as the author of the text of the American National Anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner. Key observed the British bombardment of Fort McHenry in 1814 during the War of 1812. He was inspired upon seeing the American flag still flying over the fort at dawn and wrote the poem Defense of Fort McHenry. It was published within a week with the suggested tune of the popular song to Anna Creon in Heaven. I had never known this or been aware of this until now, to be frank, until today. The tune came apparently from the song to Anna Creon in Heaven. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, or Anna Creon. It's A-N-A-C-R-E-O-N. And we'll go back to that, excuse me, a little later. So the song with Key's lyrics became known as the Star-Spangled Banner and slowly gained in popularity as an unofficial anthem, finally achieving official status more than a century later under President Herbert Hoover as the national anthem. And that's not a coincidence. We'll talk about that later. Herbert Hoover, you know, the president who was in power when the stock market collapsed, the crash of 1929 that led to the Great Depression, and began the fast decline of the Republic when, you know, that led to FDR coming into power, Polio Boy, and we've talked about him a million times, so we'll not go into too much detail. And that's not a coincidence because we mentioned that when America died, began, it went into the point of death on the 6th of September, 2023, as we've described before, which was 26 years to the day of the burial of Princess Diana. And we talked about this, I think, in passing before. Then it went brain dead, or its heart died, on the 8th of September, or in other words, 3 days, you know, the 6th, 7th, and 8th. During those 3 days, the three core elements of America died. And on the 8th of September, New York died, and New York City and its calling, everything, died on the 8th of September, 2023, which was 1 year to the day of the burial of Queen Betty II. That's what I call her, or Elizabeth II. She might better be called, she should have been called Victoria II, because she was a repeat of Queen Victoria, only worse, in the sense that she had so many opportunities to fix things. Victoria was did a lot of things wrong, but she did it in a certain ignorance, you could say. And Elizabeth II had the opportunity, having history to look at, to take notes from, just continued on the same course and just repeated Victoria's reign. And that's why there's no monarchy in England anymore. The son of a bitch was in power, who is supposedly the king. Chuck the Turd is not a real king. There is no royalty in to the eyes of the truth. The royalty is dead, and that's why Chuck the Turd is cursed, and that's why he has cancer. That's why poor Princess Kate ended up with cancer as well. She's got, even though she doesn't share in the evil of the whole family, she's gotten caught up in it, and she's the closest thing to Princess Di that there is there, but without being a Princess Di, and that's why the cancer fell on her, unfortunately. But the thing is that America died between September 6th and September the 8th. And then it continued, everything being taken away. See, starting September 6th, for all intents and purposes, America was dead. But then when September the 8th came, that was, to me, the point of death, like a stabbing of the heart. That's when New York died, everything died, everything from New York was taken away. And then 10 more days continued where one thing after another was taken away from America, and then it concluded this death process on the 18th of September, 2023. And I think I've shared before that some months before the death of America, I was sitting at the pier here in Hoboken, New Jersey, looking across the Hudson River at the Manhattan skyline. And I was sitting there and just thinking, you know, what is going on? Because I didn't know if America was going to live or die. And I was uncertain about my own future, about things. And I remember just hearing it like a thunder within me, the 18th of September, 1928. And something happened on that day. Like as if something had happened that we crossed a certain line on the 18th of September 1928, I don't know how to explain it. Like, we had been given chance after chance as a nation, and when the 18th of September came and went, we crossed a line. Like, okay, now you're on a downward slope towards death, but we still had the chance to, you know, at every step we had a chance to correct the situation, but we never did. So we went on a 95-year decline from the 18th of September 1928 to the 18th of September 2023, and America died during those, went into this downhill slide, and died 95 years later to the day. And that's why it's not a coincidence that only 140 some days later, after that date of September the 18th, 1928, the stock market crashed in October of 29. I'm sorry, it was not 140 days. It was, I forget, but a little bit of a year and a few weeks later, the stock market crashed. We went into this horrible Great Depression. It led to the rise of Polio Boy, FDR, which means Fast Decline of the Republic. And then everything declined since then. So it's not, but going back to the original thing here, it's not a coincidence that we had Francis Scott Key's anthem as the unofficial national anthem. And it was only when President Herbert Hoover came along, the guy who was there during the stock market crash of 1929, it was under his presidency that this anthem became the official anthem, national anthem of the United States of America. So let's continue reading here. Key was a lawyer in Maryland and Washington, D.C. for 4 decades and worked on important cases, including the Burr conspiracy trial. Burr, you know, it's related to Aaron Burr, the vice president who killed Alexander Hamilton in a duel and all that. But this conspiracy trial had to do with some accusations against Burr that he was plotting through his international connections to do something. But that's not, we'll not go off topic on that. We'll just continue reading here. So it says here, but Burr is not a very pleasant character. So it's interesting that he's mentioned there. And he argued numerous times before the Supreme Court, speaking of Key. He was nominated for district attorney for the District of Columbia by President Andrew Jackson, where he served from 1833 to 1841. He was a devout Episcopalian. So it says here, Key owned slaves from 1800, during which time abolitionists ridiculed his words, claiming that America was more like the land of the free and home of the oppressed. As district attorney, he suppressed abolitionists, and he lost a case against Reuben Crandall in 1836, where he accused the defendant's abolition publications of instigating slaves to rebel. He was also a leader of the American Colonization Society, which sent former slaves to Africa. He freed some of his slaves in the 1830s, paying one as his farm foreman to supervise his other slaves. He publicly criticized slavery and gave free legal representation to some slaves seeking freedom, but he also represented owners of runaway slaves. He had 8 slaves at the time of his death. So you see how this mixed bag of good and bad that he had, which is kind of emblematic of America, you know, that, you know, half-heartedness that we've always had. This, yeah, we're going to do it, but not do it. And we are going to go with the truth, but not quite go with the truth. This yes and no kind of situation. So yes, he and we'll mention a little more about his views on slavery later here in this they're mentioned here in this article on Wikipedia. But the fact that he was a co-founder and leader of the American Colonization Society, and we talked about this society in previous audio snippets when talking about Lincoln. The society believed that the solution to the slave problem was to send all black people back to Africa. And Lincoln, as we described before, was very supportive of this idea. And I think, and it's believed that he continued, he tried real hard to solve the slavery problem by sending black people back to Africa. But he gave up on that idea around 1863. When someone convinced him that maybe because the Civil War was going on, and never ending, and someone convinced him that what you can do is emancipate the slaves, and galvanize them so that you can recruit black people to fight for the Union, and that's what convinced him, but as we described before, Lincoln was really never committed to setting black people free. That's why he was. That's why he had Andrew Johnson as his vice president in 1864. That's why he also was so quick to forgive, quote unquote, the Southern rebellious states and allow them into the Union, even if they were not committed to giving freedom to black people. So the thing is that this Key guy was a founder of this movement, this horrible movement that was bent on kind of banishing black people from America, just sending them back oops, you know, whatever, you know, sorry, we brought you over, we're done with you, we're sending you back. And I know that it was as we've described before, there was a reason why slavery happened. It was a punishment and a judgment, for all the debt, the moral, debt that black people had accumulated against the truth and against humanity. And they were enslaved and brought to America as a way to pay back the debt. But once the debt was paid back, America was supposed to say, okay, you've done your time, now you're free to start all over again. And that, and that's when Georgia, the colony of Georgia, was born. And that's when the end of slavery was supposed to start. We've gone through this in great detail. But the thing is that this Key fellow was not connected to the truth at all. He was all over the place. So he was, fighting for freed slaves, and in other cases, defending slave owners, and so forth. So let's go to the part here in this article that talks about his views on slavery in a little more detail. It says here, Key purchased his first slave in 1800 or 1801 and owned six slaves in 1820. He freed seven in the 1830s and owned eight when he died. Eight is the number of regeneration. So it's interesting that he owned eight. So regeneration was in slavery, in a sense. That's a figure. That's what that represents. One of his freed slaves continued to work for him for wages as his farm's foreman, supervising several slaves. He also represented several slaves seeking their freedom, as well as several slave owners seeking return of their runaway slaves. He was one of the executors of John Randolph of Roanoke's will, which freed his 400 slaves, and he fought to enforce the will for the next decade and to provide the freed men and women with land to support themselves. So you see the good side of him. It says here, Key is known to have publicly criticized slavery's cruelties, and a newspaper editorial stated that he often volunteered to defend the downtrodden sons and daughters of Africa, unquote. The editor said that Key, quote, convinced me that slavery was wrong, radically wrong, unquote. And then it says here, quote, increasingly credited to Key, stating that free black people are, quote, a distinct inferior race of people, which all experience proves to be the greatest evil that afflicts a community, unquote, is erroneous. The quote is taken from an 1838 letter that Key wrote to Reverend Benjamin Tappan of Maine, who had sent Key a questionnaire about the attitudes of Southern religious institutions about slavery. Rather than representing a statement by Key identifying his personal thoughts, the words quoted are offered by Key to describe the attitudes of others who assert that former slaves could not remain in the U.S. as paid laborers. This was the official policy of the American Colonization Society. Key was an ACS leader, ACS, American Colonization Society. He was an ACS leader and fundraiser for the organization, but he himself did not send the men and women he freed to Africa upon their emancipation. The original confusion around this quote rises from ambiguities in the 1937 biography of Key by Edward S. Delaplane. Key was a founding member and active leader of the ACS, whose primary goal was to send free black people to Africa. Though many free black people were born in the United States by this time, historians argue that upper-class American society, of which Key was a part, could never, quote, envision a multiracial society, unquote. The ACS was not supported by most abolitionists or free black people of the time, but the organization's work would eventually lead to the creation of Liberia in 1847. I think I've shared this before, the creation of Liberia is one of the greatest crimes America committed. Horrible, horrible. Think about all the people who were sent off to Liberia and all their descendants. They should be here in America, but instead they're trapped in Liberia in poverty and despair when they should have been allowed to be here to have an opportunity to live the American dream in one form or another. It's, the existence of Liberia brings sadness to my heart. Every time I think of the name Liberia, just makes me sad. And it was created in 1847. And the number 47 is going to feature in this, in what we share about the Key Bridge collapse, very prominently, as you will hopefully get to. Not sure if we're going to do it in this audio snippet because we're barely getting started, and we're already 35 minutes into the recording. So let me just quickly read what it says here about his views on abolitionism. In the early 1830s, American thinking on slavery changed quite abruptly. Considerable opposition to the ACS's project emerged. Led by newspaper editor and publisher William Lloyd Garrison, a growing portion of the population noted that only a few, very small number of free black people were actually moved, and they faced brutal conditions in West Africa with very high mortality. Free black people made it clear that few of them wanted to move, and if they did, it would be to Canada, Mexico, or Central America, not Africa. The leaders of the ACS, including Key, were predominantly slave owners. The society was intended to preserve slavery rather than eliminate it. In the words of philanthropist Jared Smith, it was, quote, quite as much an anti-abolition as colonization society, unquote. This colonization society had, by an invisible process, half conscious, half unconscious, been transformed into a serviceable organ and member of the slave power, unquote. So the alternative to the colonization of America, of Africa, project of the ACS was the total and immediate abolition of slavery in the United States. This Key was firmly against, with or without slave owner compensation, and he used his position as district attorney to attack abolitionists. In 1833, he secured a grand jury indictment against Benjamin Lundy, editor of the anti-slavery publication Genius of Universal Emancipation, and his printer William Greer, for libel after Lundy published an article that declared, quote, there is neither mercy nor justice for colored people in this District of Columbia, unquote. Lundy's article, Key said in the indictment, was, quote, intended to injure, oppress, aggrieve, and vilify the good name, fame, credit, and reputation of the magistrates and constables, unquote, of Washington. Lundy left town rather than face trial. Greer was acquitted. So, in other words, Key said, okay, let's send them all to Africa. Slavery is evil, but let's send them all back to Africa. But all you all who are talking about setting the slaves free and abolishing slavery, you're all evil. So he went after them. And when this publication wrote that there's neither mercy nor justice for colored people in this District of Columbia, and obviously he was the district attorney in D.C., appointed by racist son of a bitch Andrew Jackson, he took offense at that, and he sued them for libel. Imagine that. So a man was expressing his opinion about how he was conducting, doing his job. And it was a freedom of speech. And what he did, this Francis Scott Key, the man after whom the bridge was named, what he did was to sue the publication for libel. He wanted to destroy them. Yeah, interesting, you know, like what Democrats do nowadays. And he was, you could say, a Democrat, because Andrew Jackson was the one who appointed him as district attorney, and Andrew Jackson was the founder of the Democrat Party, for all intents and purposes, from what I understand. So the thing is that Democrats nowadays use the judicial system as warfare against anyone who opposes them. So this guy had the gall, this publication, had the gall to say, you're not doing a good job. Okay, we're suing you for libel because you're injuring, oppressing, aggrieving, and vilifying the good name, fame, credit, and reputation of the magistrates and constables. In other words, you can't criticize who the people in power. Imagine that. And so the Lundy, who was the one who published the article, left town. Rather than face trial, and the printer William Greer was acquitted. But imagine that sort of the guy who wrote as we said earlier, he was criticized for writing for the land of the free and the home of the brave, the land of the free. And he was attacking anyone who used their freedom to criticize him. Just to criticize him. All he said was, there's neither mercy nor justice for colored people in this District of Columbia. Oh, I'll sue you. How dare you? How dare you question me? This is the man after whom the bridge was named. So now that we have a kind of a sense of this guy. Oh, and let's talk about his religious views. There's a section here in the article on a Wikipedia article on him about his quote religion. So it says here, Key was a devout and prominent Episcopalian. And interesting to me when I think Episcopalian, every time I think of Episcopalian, I think of homosexuality and the homosexual arrogance flag that hangs over their churches all the time. And I see them constantly. This obsession with promoting sodomy and homosexuality. That's because we are about love. And as I've always said, if you are promoting that because you want to show that God is so embraces everybody and all that, well, then why don't you put up a satanic flag too? Because God loves everybody, right? So he also loves Satanists, doesn't he? Oh, yes, he's a God of love. Okay, then put up a Satanist flag. No, we don't support that. Oh, so that means that if you're putting the flag there, it's because you're supporting the behavior that that flag represents. Correct? It's not about love. So when they phrase it in the context of love, it's nonsense. Because let's put up a swastika then, because God loves Nazis too, right? He loves everybody, doesn't he? Oh, yes, he does. Well, then let's put up a Nazi flag. Oh, no, we hate that. We don't support that. Oh, so it's because, in other words, if you have a flag there, you're saying you're embracing and promoting the behavior the flag represents. It's not about love. It's about you promoting a certain behavior. So it's interesting that, obviously, the Episcopalian Church was different back in those days, but there were roots there that have blossomed into the stinky and horrendous fruit that we see today. But he was a devout and prominent Episcopalian. In his youth, he also became an Episcopal priest rather than a lawyer. Throughout his life, he sprinkled biblical references in his correspondence. He was active at All Saints Parish in Frederick, Maryland, near his family's home. He also helped found or financially support several parishes in the new national capital, including St. John's Episcopal Church in Georgetown, Trinity Episcopal Church in present-day Judiciary Square, and Christ Church in Alexandria, at the time in the District of Columbia. From 1818 until his death in 1843, Key was associated with the American Bible Society. Oh, and by the way, the fact that he died in 1843 is also very relevant. The 43 at the end of it. Because, as we've said before, the last visible president of the United States before the American Republic died was Bush 43. We only had 43 presidents, visible presidents. We haven't had a president since then. We have had White House residents, which is a different story. You take the W from White, H-O from House, and then put it in front of resident, and then you get what we have generally. We've had horsidents. So the thing is that... It's interesting that he died in 1843, just like the American Republic, that his national anthem represents and promotes and honors, died with President number 43, which was George W. Bush. So Key was associated with the American Bible Society from 1818 until his death in 1843. He successfully opposed an abolitionist resolution presented to that group around 1838. He was all Bible and all, and all this stuff, but apparently he had kind of a mixed connection, to the truth, to God, to the God, that promotes truth. She successfully opposed an abolition resolution presented to that group around 1838. Sarah Sierra Key also helped found two Episcopal seminaries, one in Baltimore and the other across the Potomac River in Alexandria, the Virginia Theological Seminary. Key also published a prose work called The Power of Literature and Its Connection to Religion in 1834. So he was a very devout, and I say this in quote, Christian. He had, yes, slavery was evil and all that, but he defended slave owners who were trying to get their runaway slaves back. He opposed anyone who said slavery should be abolished. Even though slavery was evil, slavery should not be abolished. Oh no, let's just have the solution of sending them all back to Africa. So, what is the point of all the religiosity when they don't understand what the real solution is? And this goes to what conservatism is all about in America. All these Christian conservatives, the same thing. All this talk about God and the Bible and all that. But at the end of the day, they don't understand the fundamental truths that have to be embraced and the things that have to be changed for truth to prevail. That's what this guy represents. The guy who's after whom the bridge was named. Now that we have an idea of the man behind the bridge, you could say, let's go back to the article and continue talking about, okay, the ship. The ship was a 948-foot-long ship, it says here in this article from the Daily Mail, the one that we started reading at the beginning. 948, not a coincidence. 948 is equal to 316 times 3. And it can also be taken as 79 times 12. So if you take 79 times 12, you get 948. If you take 316 times 3, you get 948. Now, 316. Now, anyone who's lived in America for any significant amount of time, I guess around the world it might be the same as well, but I'm not sure. But at least someone who lived through the 80s in America, if you say 316, they will tell you John 3:16, even if they're not Christian. And the reason for that is because there was this thing that happened in American sports. I remember when I was a kid in the 80s, living in Baltimore, watching football games or baseball games, especially football games. Every time, for example, that someone would kick an extra point, they would show the shot of the goal posts and the kicker, you know, kicking the ball towards the goalpost. There was always someone, it seemed like there was always someone behind the goalposts holding up a John 3:16 sign. Because they kind of positioned themselves in a strategic place where they knew that the cameras would catch them. So they, when they knew that the extra point was coming or a field goal, they would hold up the, someone would be seated behind the goalpost knowing that there was a camera shot that would be pointing at them. And they would raise up the John 3:16 sign and you'd see it all over the place. And John 3:16 is the popular verse about, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son so that whosoever believeth in him may not perish but have everlasting life. So it's an evangelization verse about converting people to Christianity. So, and the number three, it represents many things, but I always see it in my head as a contrast to the number two. Represents operating, it's like humanity has to operate at level three, but we usually operate at most at level two. And the matriarchal system is based on two levels. The system based on truth is built on three levels. And we've talked about the three male personalities and the two female personalities, and that's where you could say that comes from. And it's also, there are other elements there, other reasons why that 2 out of 3 thing has that representation, but we'll not go into that right now. The thing is that 3:16 times 3, 3:16, if you think about John 3:16, it's talking about immature Christians. And why do I say that? It's because it's just Christians who are born, because that's what that passage is supposed to talk about, getting people to be born again. So people getting born, but then they don't grow. So they stay as little babies. They're just born, but not adults. They're just born again. It's like staying at a Christianity at a very basic level. That's what the 3:16 represents here. And the number 3 is saying, okay, I'm going to operate, I'm going to get to level 3. It's like saying, I'm going to get to level 3 by staying an immature Christian and not growing. And that's what matriarchal conservatism, especially the Christians, are all about. They have this very, very, very low-level understanding of their Christianity, of their Bible. They live at this very, 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 very superficial, simplistic level. Oh, it's all about love, and it's all about going to church and praying before eating, you know, saying grace and all these things. And we just live this very basic understanding. We don't care about deep truths. We don't care about anything deeper. We just want to live at this superficial level, and we can make it to level 3. At 2, it's like first 2 levels are temporary. It's like living at the temporal level or temporary level. Level 3 is going into the eternal level, to the permanent or eternal level. And 948, which is 3:16 times 3, speaks of all these Christians who want to stay spiritually immature, living in this very simplistic understanding of the truth and their God, and thinking that they can then achieve perfection and eternity in that immature, childlike, baby-like state. And that's why the country died, because conservatism and their Christians never went to level 3. They never understood that they had to go up one level and go back past that simplistic and inconsistent Christianity that they have lived in all their lives, in that matriarchal church system that they uphold. So that's what 948 represents in 3:16 times 3. And the 79 times 12, which also gives you 948, has an even more sinister reality to it. 79, every time I think of 79, it's like, whenever I see a 7 and a 9 together in 79, for example, I always, for some reason, it's like there's an 8 missing there. You know, it's like going from 7 to 9, but skipping 8. And 8 is the number of regeneration. It's like trying to get from 7 to 9 without going through 8. It's like America saying, we're going to continue our progression as a nation, but we are going to continue, and 9 is the number of power. We're going into full power, but we're going to skip any regeneration that we need. And regeneration means any fundamental transformation of issues, underlying issues that need to be resolved. 8, regeneration means wiping out certain stuff and starting all over again. It's saying taking the things that are beyond repair and destroying them and starting anew, like renewing the foundations, not just building on a shaky foundation and adding more layers. It's like that's what regeneration is. It's wiping things out, like in the flood, you know, in the Bible it talks about the Noah's flood, where the whole earth was wiped out. It was beyond repair. It had to be wiped out, and a new foundation of humanity had to be started. That's what the flood represents. So the thing is that that's what 79 represents, is skipping regeneration. And so, and it all ties in, because there's an those of you who visit the website where these recordings are posted may or may not be aware of this article that we posted way back, long, long, long time ago. It was posted on the 14th of December, 2008. And it's called, it's in the questions and answers section of that website. And the title of this posting or this article or whatever you want to call it, is called Skipping Eight. So I'm going to read what we wrote at the top of that article. Someone sent this question. So it was a question that someone sent, and we replied to, you know, what that, replied to the question. The question was about what the meaning of something was, and we gave a reply to that question in this posting. So let me read the portion section of the posting, the question section. So it says here, we found the following. It says, this question was emailed on November the 9th, 2008. We found the following interesting information concerning baromas. It says here, misspelling is automatic election. From the following website today. So there's a link to this website, and I think it's still up and I think this website is still running. This link is so old, but it's from whatdoesitmean.com. And if you want to go to the article on the website where these recordings are posted, you can go look it up. It's the title of the question and answer article is Skipping Eight, with skipping space and then the number eight. So the quote from this link says, in the early morning hours of November the 5th, at a public park in the state of Illinois, Barack Obama claimed victory in his quest to become president of the United States. Barely noticed, however, was that also on November the 5th, in that same state of Illinois, the winning lottery numbers for that day were 666. And then it says here, in ascertaining the veracity of the above statement, we found this. The evening pick three numbers were indeed 666, but the evening pick four numbers were 7779, and the midday pick three was 779. What does one make of all that? So that was the question. So, in other words, the election was held on the 4th of November, if I remember correctly, 2008. But, you know, the votes were counted, and then in the early morning hours of the next day, remember the 5th of November 2008, the day the American Republic died. That day, early morning hours, it says here, in a public park in the state of Illinois. And why Illinois? Because Barack Obastard was a senator from Illinois. So in the state of Illinois, he announced, I won. In Illinois, as we've said on this website, is the stronghold of the pastoral matriarchy, of the matriarchal system of the church in America and its institutions. That's the heart of it. That's where its capital city is, Chicago in Illinois, in the state of Illinois. And Barack Hussein Obastard claimed victory, and the winning lottery numbers that day were 666, the evening pick three numbers. So apparently they have two pick three drawings every day, I guess, or on that day of the week. The evening pick three numbers were 666 on the day that Barack Obastard announced victory. That's not a coincidence. And then in the midday pick three was 779. And notice 779, skipping the eight. And the pick four evening numbers were 779. So the pick three in the evening was 666, and the pick four was 7779. So it's like 6, 6, 6, 7, 7, 7, 9. So you see the 8 being skipped there? Not a coincidence. All these things happen for a reason. And the ironic thing is all of this happened in the year 2008 that had a big, big fat 8 in the middle, at the end of it. But America did everything in its power to skip the 8. to skip the regeneration. That's what conservatives say, you know, we just need to go back to our roots. And no, you needed to regenerate the whole thing. The system was broken. The Constitution is a disaster. It held up because, you know, just out of mercy, it was being held up. But eventually it was going to collapse, just like the bridge. The Key Bridge collapsed. But we never wanted to admit that. And because of that, we were given a bastard in the White House whose goal in life was to do a fundamental transformation of America. In other words, he came with a different type of regeneration. He came up with a degeneration of America, because there was a, see, as the, you know, people always say, nature abhors a vacuum, and reality abhors a vacuum. When there's a vacuum that we don't fill, someone else is going to come and fill it. And when they come and fill it, usually the other guy comes to fill it the wrong way. And that's what this bastard represented. And let me see if I can... let me see. I guess that's all we have to say about this. Let me read something that we wrote here in the answer. It's a very brief answer, by the way, if you want to go read it. Unlike most of the articles on that website, this one was relatively brief. But it says here, we wrote, this is what America said to the truth. Quote, we do not care for the sons of Cain. And there's a reason why we say that. McCain was the one who ran against him in 2008 against Obastard. McCain literally means son of Cain. And there's an explanation for what that represents, and there's a link there if you want to look at it. We do not care for the sons of Cain. We do not care about your restoration plan, speaking to the truth. We want someone to whisper sweet nothings in our ear who will tell us that Mother Government will take care of us and make us better. We're willing to deceive ourselves by ignoring all the signs warning us of this man's character, this man's abilities, this man's intentions. He comes to end our pain. He comes to end our need to sacrifice and to recognize the fundamental flaws in our ways. He comes to pin the blame of our circumstances on a few isolated personalities, not on us as a nation. He is perfect for us. He will save us from having to leave the old contract. He is the one. That's what we said to the truth about Obastard. And that's why the American Republic died. See, America, what it all represented and its potential, everything died in September of 2023. But the American Republic that was built, you know, starting in 1776, or you could say 1787 or 88, whichever year you want to pick, you know, because 1787 was when the Constitution was ratified, and 1788, I think, is when it was implemented. And we started the first president, you know, George Washington began in 1789. So whichever year you want to use to say this is when the American Republic started, that republic built by the founding fathers died on the 5th of November 2008. That republic is dead, was dead. Since then, everything has been a joke. The president, you know, does a whole sorts of things. Congress is all over the place. The judicial system has gone wacko even more than it was before, because everything is out of whack. There is no system anymore. It had all collapsed. It was just being held up by this flimsy thing. It's like we were given like 15 years to correct things, a little less than 15 years to change things, but we just kept saying no, 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 and then boom, the truth said, I'm fed up with you, I'm divorcing you, you're done. And that's when America died, in September 2023. But so that's what the 79 represents in 948, which is 79 times 12. It points to all of this. And 12 speaks of government or dominion. That's what the number 12 represents. So 79 times 12 represents the dominion of a mindset that refuses regeneration. And that's what conservatism is. That's why the American Republic died. And that's why the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which points to the national anthem, which points to patriotism and to American values and blah, 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 everything that conservatives get all tingly about. All of that is what the bridge represents, and that's why that bridge collapsed when it was hit by this dolly thing. Now, every time I would see the word dolly, I would think of Denali, and every time I think of Denali, I think of Old Bastard, and you say, what? So let me try to explain this. I don't know why in my head, every time I see Dolly, I see Denali. And Denali is a name that always stuck with me and always offended me profoundly, because I forget, there was some sort of mountain. I don't know if it was, I forget which mountain, or in Alaska, I think it was, that Old Bastard decided to rename as Mount Denali. Let me see if I can look it up right now as I'm speaking here. Yeah, it says here Denali on Wikipedia. Yeah, Mount McKinley, used to be known as Mount McKinley, is the highest mountain peak in North America. So, and it's in Alaska. Is it in Alaska? Yes, it is. And Barack Old Bastard decided to rename it to Denali. If I, let me see if I can find that mentioned here in this article. Yeah, on August 30th, 2015, just ahead of a presidential visit to Alaska, the Barack Hussein Old Bastard regime announced the name Denali would be restored in line with the Alaska Geographic Board's designation, because Denali was an Amerindian name. So, you know, because Old Bastard wanted to kind of wipe out anything that had to do with whiteness or European things, and, you know, he was promoting all this racial hatred, and as you may know, all this, anything white is bad, or European is bad, anything Amerindian or black or Hispanic or whatever the hell color you want, except white, is good. So so that's what, and Denali, I think, means great, or something, I forget what it, let me see if I can find the meaning of the name here. Someone says here it doesn't mean the great one. This is commonly believed. So the name Denali is derived from the Koyukun name and is based on a verb theme meaning high or tall. According to linguist blah, 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 it doesn't mean the great one. Obviously, if it means high or tall, that means great. So I don't know. There's some people who have who are picky, like, oh, that's not what it means. Yeah, that's, if it's high, if it means high or tall, then it means great. And that's what Denali means, like exalting something. It was a way of Barack Old Bastard exalting the Amerindian spirit, and putting down the European spirit. That's basically what Denali represents. So that's what, it's a subversion of anything European, and exalting all cultures, non-European cultures, even if they have proved to be inferior or primitive or unable to produce anything close to what the European culture has produced. That's what that represents. But the other thing that comes to my mind when I think of Dolly, the name Dolly, is Dalai Lama. Every time I see Dolly, I'd also see Dalai Lama. And that makes sense in my head, because the Dalai Lama represents, I haven't mentioned this often, and it's not mentioned on the website where these recordings are posted very often. Let me see if being doing an impromptu thing here. Let me see if I can find it off the top of my head here. There is a posting on this website called the Sons of what is it called? Lots of very long. The Sons of Javon Kittim. It was posted on the 30th of November 2019. And we talk about something that is very strongly connected to the Himalayas. I think we do mention it here. I don't know if it's mentioned it very explicitly, maybe not. The thing is that there is something, there's a spirit or mindset that comes from the Himalayas. You know, it's a fortress spirit, and I can't go into too many details here, but every time I'd see Old Bastard, I would see that spirit in him. He came with that, empowered by that spirit. That's part of what made him so appealing and popular. And it's a spirit that comes from the Himalayas, a mindset. That's why he looked like a man of peace. He came to fix everything and bring nirvana to America and the world. And it's something from there, from the Himalayas. I don't know how to explain it, but the thing is that that's what that ship represents. It's like that ship represented Barack Obastrid, what all that he entailed and represented. And he rammed against the support beam of the American Republic, and it all collapsed. And the interesting thing is that the ship, the Dolly, was most people may not be aware of this, but it was coming out of Baltimore, obviously, the Baltimore port, and it was headed for Colombo, Sri Lanka. So, you know, that part of the world where that spirit or mindset is very prevalent, that Himalayan spirit, Buddhist kind of mindset. Interestingly, in the article on Wikipedia about Sri Lanka, you know, the place that this ship was headed to, let me see if I can find it right now. Where is this article? We supposedly had it here. Let me pull it up. The article on Sri Lanka. It says here that it's an island country in South Asia. It's a tiny not tiny, but you know, compared to India, it looks tiny. It's this relatively tiny island off like to the southeast a little bit of India. India is like a triangle, so a little bit southeast, right next door to that triangle, that's where you find Sri Lanka. And Sri Lanka is known as the teardrop of India because it looks like a teardrop. It's like India's crying, and there's this little tear coming out of India, out of the India triangle, and that's Sri Lanka. So it's the teardrop. So it represents, you could say, in a certain sense, sorrow and mourning. Mourning with a U, MOURNING. And this island is 70% Buddhist and 13% Hindu. So that's that according to this article. And so that's what Sri Lanka represents. It's the spirit or mindset that was inside that empowered this fortress spirit or mindset that was inside Barack Hussein Obastor that propelled him into the White House and to do all the and to hypnotize so many people and enable the beginning of the dismantling of the country. And the capital of Sri Lanka is Colombo, C-O-L-O-M-B-O. And when I would see that, I'd say, oh, Columbus, you know, like Cristoforo Colombo. I think that's how they say it in Italian, the name of Christopher Columbus, Cristoforo Colombo. I don't know if that's how they say it, but let's pretend like that's how they say it. But that's how you spell it in Italian. And I think that's kind of close to the name of the detective Colombo. But it turns out that Colombo, the actual name, it says here, the name Colombo, I'm reading the article on Colombo in Wikipedia, the city. The name Colombo, first introduced by the Portuguese in 1505, is believed to be derived from the classical Sinhala name, S-I-N-H-A-L-A. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right. Sinhala is an Indo-Aryan language primarily spoken in Sri Lanka. From the classical Sinhala name, Kolon Thota, meaning port on the river Kalani. Kolon, like K-O-L-O-N, like colon. T-H-O-T-A, Kolon Thota, meaning port on the river Kalani. And the other thing that this Colombo city is the largest city in Sri Lanka with a population of 5.6 million. And to be frank, I'd never heard of that city until today, or until this story about the ship. But turns out that this is a huge city. 5.6 million is a whole bunch of people. And it's the capital of Sri Lanka. So if that ever comes up in a trivia question, now you know. That's the capital of Sri Lanka. And that's where this it was headed to a place that is representative of that Himalayan fortress spirit or mindset that empowered Obastor to destroy, to kill off the American Republic and begin our fast decline to our complete death. And interestingly, the name Dali itself, so we've mentioned, you know, Dali related to Denali, that mindset of killing off anything European, and Dali relating to the Dalai Lama and that Himalayan fortress spirit. But the name Dali itself, if you look it up, let me see if I can find it here. In nameberry.com, a website about the meanings of names, I guess, they say that Dali is a variation of Dahlia, Spanish or Georgian Dahlia. The name Dali is a girl's name, meaning Dahlia. So it's a girl's name. It's a feminine name. So in other words, this is the matriarchal spirit or mindset, empowered by this fortress Himalayan mindset or spirit, coming in and destroying the foundations of conservatism, represented by Francis Scott Key and the Star Spangled Banner and patriotism and what have you. So Dame Dali is a girl's name, meaning Dahlia. In Georgian mythology, Dali is the goddess of hunting. The origins of her name are disputed. Some scholars claim it comes from the Georgian word for mourning, Dila, while others claim links to words for demon and God, G-O-D, you know, small g, lowercase g. So it says here, Dali is also used as a short form of the Spanish name Dahlia, a variation of Dahlia with an H, D-A-H-L-I-A, or inspired by the artistic surname Dali. British comedian Noel Fielding chose this name for his first daughter. Didn't know that. So the thing is that it represents it has a connotation of a demon and a goddess of hunting, and that's what Old Bastard came. He came like empowered by this spirit or mindset that came like a hunter to conquer, because that's what a hunter represents, is he's a conqueror. He goes out and conquers another animal, hunts it down, kills it, and takes it and eats it. That's conquering. So it comes with this conquering of, and behind it there's a demon. And that so that ship was in like a full-blown representation of Old Bastard. And then when you take it, when this is all representative of 2008, but then if you project it to 2023, it's the same story, only the names change. That Dolly represents that full-blown liberal oppression with Bite Me in the White House and all this, and all these liberal Democrats just coming to destroy the country. That's what Dolly represents at projected to 2023. And the thing, and it all points to the reality that the system that the founding fathers left behind, that conservatives defend so often, did not have the infrastructural capability to withstand the destruction that the liberals heaved upon it. You see what we're saying? That's what we've been saying all this time. The system had so many gaps and holes in it that if someone was determined to destroy it, they could do it very easily. See, the bridge didn't take like 2 hours to fall and collapse. It was just hit and boom, it just all came down. I think it all came down in a matter of 15 or 10 seconds. Maybe when I say 15, I think I'm exaggerating. I mean, that's how fast the thing went down. Like a house of cards, and that's how it's described somewhere else in an article that we may or may not get to in this recording, in this audio snippet. Because it was, and conservatives kept saying, "We've been around for 200 years." Yeah, we've been around because we've gotten lucky, because we haven't had the system was so prone to being abused and was getting abused over and over again in small portions, but we chose to ignore those warnings. Just like I don't know if we've gotten to that part yet, but there were a lot of warnings before the ship hit. I think 4 minutes. For 4 minutes, the ship knew that it was in trouble, and it started announcing to the authorities, notifying them, and that's why they closed off the bridge. And no, there were no more. That's why there were not more cars on the bridge when it collapsed, because police had stopped cars going into the bridge on both sides before the collapse. So just like like there were so many warnings here, 4 minutes of warning. We had warning after warning. And we just said, no, we're fine, we're fine, we're fine, we're fine. And no, we're not fine. And the sad thing is, after all that has happened, the country is gone, just like the bridge. And conservatives just keep saying, no, we just need to go back to the way things were. Let's just put Trump in the White House and everything's going to be fine again. And it's not going to be fine. It's gone. You needed to change the whole structure. You needed to restructure government. Restructure the way of politics was run, was executed in this country. You needed to destroy the party system. You needed to do so many things. You needed to rewrite the rights in the Constitution and lay them down in a clear way. You needed to change the branches of government from three to five and restructure everything, and redefine the boundaries. There'd be no more judicial branch, as we described. The judicial branch would be embedded inside the legislative branch as just another agency or department inside the legislative branch, and so forth. But no, we don't need that, because God gave us the Constitution. That's what conservatives kept saying. God gave us the Constitution. They didn't say it like that out loud, but that's what, for all intents and purposes, they were saying. That's why they kept saying, next to the Bible, the Constitution is the most sacred document in human history. I literally heard someone say that at one point, a staunch conservative. So, yes, they thought this was the truth, and it was just a flimsy little bridge. That's all it was. A flimsy little bridge waiting for a big disaster to happen. Now that we said all that about Dolly, we just have just gotten started. We just started talking about the number 948. So then let's continue reading here. The ship in the article, the Daily Mail article that we started off on, we're barely on like the third paragraph. The ship, a 948 long foot long dolly operated by this by Singaporean company Synergy Group, collided with a 1.2 mile bridge shortly after 1:26 a.m. as it left port. The name of the company that operates this ship, Synergy Group, represents people working as a community, working together. That's the matriarchal mindset. That we just have to come together as a community and work together, and that's how we get things done. And the conservatives also have this. They don't have it as brazenly corrupted and blatant as the liberals have it. But conservatives also have the same mindset. We just need to work together. We just need to organize and do better campaigning and more ballot harvesting, and that's how we're going to beat the fraud in the next election. And we just need to get out the vote, and then we'll get Trump back, and everything's going to be all right. And we just need to call our congressmen and complain whenever something bad happens. No need to co go and restructure the whole system. No need to talk about saying that the founding fathers made this mistake and that mistake, and we need to correct it. No. We just need to work harder, have more synergy, more team effort, and rah rah rah, go team go, and we're gonna make it happen. But so conservatives have that synergy thing at a more subtle level. Liberals have it at a very blatant level. Where everything is submitted to the community, submitted to the collective. Your individuality has to be destroyed and squashed, and you have to become just one more cog in this big wheel where you serve the higher purpose. And the higher purpose is defined by some elite who decide what is best for everybody. So that's what the synergy, it's not an individual sacrificing for the truth in love to others. There's nothing wrong with that. It is this systematic surrendering to an elite that say we represent the collective, that you're to submit to us without thinking, without questioning. Just like Francis Scott Key saying to this printer and this publisher, how dare you question what the elites do? How dare you say that we don't we give no justice to colored people? How dare you? We're going to sue you. In the land of the free and the home of the brave, we're going to sue you for exercising your right to free speech, because you're not in synergy with us. You don't understand that you have to submit to what the elites have to say. And we'll say more about the Singaporean connection later, maybe not in this audio snippet because it's running way longer than I imagined. At least up until this point, what I knew this audio snippet would run long, but I thought we'd be further along than we are. But let's keep going. So it says here, Maryland Transportation Secretary Paul Wiedefeld. I'm not sure how to pronounce it, said on Tuesday morning it appears none of the 22 crew members were injured, as he revealed it was being steered by the specialist pilots. And the fact that it was 22 is no coincidence, because 22 is a number of divorce. I don't know why, but I just know it's a number of divorce. That's what it represents in a negative sense. And there was a divorce between America and the truth. And we'll talk about divorce later on. You'll see that it's another like sub theme running through this whole thing. So that's why it's not a coincidence that it's 22. Okay. appears none of the 22 crew members were injured, as he revealed it was being steered by the specialist pilots. Since as pilots move ships in and out of the port of Baltimore, he said at a press conference, noting that the specialist pilots depart the ships as soon as they are in open water. So in other words, the crew of the ship are not the ones who are allowed to pilot the ship out of the harbor. What they do is they have these specialists, and I think this happens in a lot of ports, that like someone who is familiar with the currents and, you know, and the surroundings, the local surroundings, is made to pilot the ship in and out of the port. And then once it's out in open water, then the specialist then gets off the boat and then gets off the ship and lets the crew of the ship run the ship, all the way to their destination. So that's what they're talking about here. So it says here, officials were quick to rule out the catastrophe as intentional or as an act of terrorism, and an early cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency, CISA, report found the container ship, quote, lost propulsion, unquote, as it was leaving port. The vessel notified MD, or Maryland Department of Transportation, that they had lost control of the vessel and a collision with the bridge was possible, the report said. It says elision here, A-L-L-I-S-I-O-N. I don't know if that's a word, but I guess they were referring to some form of collision. The vessel struck the bridge, causing a complete collapse. So the thing is, there were warnings. Just like we were being warned, there were warnings, and that's what they're referring to here. It says here, the Dolly container ship had undergone 27 inspections since 2015, and it had been found to have two deficiencies, according to a CNN review of records from the Electronic Quality Shipping Information System, EQASIS. Notably, this included a June 2023 inspection in San Antonio, Chile, where a deficiency was found in the propulsion and auxiliary machinery, with propulsion faults also noted in the early CISA report. So, okay. So the thing is, there had been 27 inspections of the ship since 2015. And out of those 27, two had had deficiencies. One was in June 2023. In other words, last year, as of the time of this recording, in the month of June. And that's very interesting. Because on June 29th, 2023, it was the 20th anniversary of the divorce, of the loss of Latin America and its calling, and because the truth had divorced Latin America. And we've talked about this before, and it's mentioned in more detail on the website where these recordings are posted. But June 29th, 2003 was the day that Latin America lost its calling and it was gone. And so 20 years later, June 29th, 2023 was the 20th anniversary of the loss of Latin America, because Latin America, the truth, just said, I can't take you anymore. I'm divorcing you. And Latin America and the truth were completely divorced. And this is the 20th anniversary on the same year that the truth would also divorce America, which happened 3 months later, less than 3 months later. So the thing is, interesting that this faulty inspection happened, or this inspection that found deficiencies, that's what I mean, happened in Chile. And it's not a coincidence that on the website where these recordings are posted, let me see if I can find it here, there is an article or a word that was shared, let me see if I can find it here. It was posted. Oh yeah, here it is. It's called Divorce in Chile. Divorce in Chile. And it was posted on the 19th of November, 2004. That's how long ago this was written. And let me read what's at the top of this of this word that was posted. You can look it up if you want to. If you want to go to that web to the website where these recordings are posted, you just look up "divorce in Chile." The word that was posted with that title. That's what we're reading here right now. It says yesterday, November the 18th of 2004. Obviously, married couples in Chile were finally allowed to divorce. Chilean President Ricardo Lagos had already signed a new law that ended the ban on divorces in Chile. Chile had until yesterday been the last Western nation where divorce was still prohibited. Today, November 19th, U.S. President George W. Bush left for Santiago, Chile, to participate in the APEC, Asian Pacific Economic Summit. In Santiago, there have been violent protests condemning the USA's involvement in Iraq and condemning Bush's visit to Chile. The protests have included the, quote, traditional, unquote, burning of the American flag, among other things. The American flag, the one that waves during the Star-Spangled Banner, written by Francis Scott Key, after whom the bridge was named. I'm just saying. Okay. Then Fox News Channel reported that in the midst of this turmoil, the president of China was also attending the APEC summit, was received by the Chilean government with full diplomatic honors. So this happened almost 20 years ago. The next day after Chile finally legalized divorce, the very next day, George W. Bush, Bush 43, the last visible president of the United States, the last president of the old American Republic, arrived in Chile for this conference, and the Chileans were all upset at him because they were protesting the Iraq War and saying Bush is a murderer and blah, 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 and all this, the stuff that Hispanics always say, you know, all the leftist Hispanics, that's the tradition of leftist communism throughout Latin America that's been there for ages. So all these crazy loons showed up to protest Bush 43's presence in Chile. And we share this in this word. Let me see if I can find it here. Let me read part of it. The fact that Chileans are protesting so fiercely against George W. Bush in the war in Iraq is another figure of why the truth divorced Latin America. Of all the people in the world, Latin America should be the first to identify themselves with people who have lived under the oppressive boot of a dictator for decades. And we say this because I don't know if where exactly, but somewhere in this word we share something about Pinochet. Let me see here. Yeah, it's a little further down. Let me just skip to that temporarily here. To this day, Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet has not been tried for the crimes committed during his dictatorial regime. The old and decrepit dictator has been hiding behind his supposed, quote, illness in order to escape the hands of justice, and the Chilean people have allowed this to happen. The truth shall judge Latin America for its constant reluctance to do justice and judgments. The truth shall judge Latin America for defending her Amorites. In other words, her exalted dictators, king dictators. Cursed be the Latin America dictators. Cursed be the strong men of Latin America, and cursed be those who support them and defend them from the truth's judgments. So Augusto Pinochet, he was like a dictator for 14 years. He did a coup d'etat against this crazy commie, Allende, Salvador Allende, I think it's 73. And he threw the commie out and he put himself in power, but instead of reinstating democracy, he was a dictator for 14 years, and he was brutal. a brutal dictator for 14 years. But a lot of conservatives, sadly, were very praised, very happy with Pinochet in Chile. They kept praising him and praising him. And part of the reason is that even though he was a nasty dictator from a political angle, from the economic angle, he was a promoter of economic freedom and free markets. He believed in laissez-faire economics, less government intrusion, and all that. And because of that, ironically, the Chilean economy prospered. When he was in power, the Chileans became relatively wealthy compared to the rest of Latin America. And Chile, by the way, has a strong, it's kind of a strange country, but I've heard that technically, I don't know if this is actually the case, but technically, Chile used to be the country with the highest percentage of European blood in them. One of the most European countries in South America. Even though, to be frank, I would give that title to Argentina. But for some reason, I think from a technical biological perspective, they were more European than Argentina, even though I could be wrong on that. But the thing is that Chile, which was more European, you could say, than other South American countries, prospered financially greatly under the Augusto Pinochet because of the free market policy that he upheld. But at the same time, he promoted a very brutal dictatorship, like where if you messed with him, he would take you down. Brutal man. And he's been, and as we said here, he's not been tried for the crimes he committed, and he has been hiding. He became ill, and he was hiding behind his illness to escape the hands of justice. And it's ironic that these people who live for under this oppression for so many years, these Chilean idiots had no understanding of what it means to have lived under Saddam Hussein's Iraq, an even more brutal dictator than Pinochet ever was. Brutal as Pinochet was, Saddam Hussein, I mean, he took the cake. He was evil beyond any comparison. And these Chileans, who should have some empathy towards the Iraqi people for having, been under the boot of a dictator, instead of that, they were opposing the very people who went to Iraq to set the Iraqi people free from such an oppressive dictator. So let's go back to reading what we said here. The Iraqi people had been forced to live under the ruthless and oppressive regime of dictator Saddam Hussein for 24 years before the U.S.-led coalition liberated that land. However, Chileans, just like most of Latin America, have chosen to hate the U.S. for having liberated Iraq. Where were the Chilean protesters when Saddam Hussein was launching chemical weapons at his own people? Where were the Chilean protesters when Saddam Hussein burned the oil fields of Kuwait, causing terrible health hazards? Where were the Chilean protesters when Hussein launched missiles against Israeli civilians during the First World Gulf War? It's only befitting the Chileans have chosen to, quote, welcome Bush so rudely, while at the same time they welcomed the president of China with full diplomatic honors. Where were the Chilean protesters when the Tiananmen massacre took place? Why don't the Chilean protesters burn Chinese flags and protest for the thousands and thousands of Chinese babies who have been massacred through China's brutal abortion laws? Why don't these fools protest against the religious persecution that has gone on in China for decades and continues even to this day? When were the Chilean fools during Mao's brutal Cultural Revolution? Cursed be the men and women who are not moved by a sense of righteous indignation, but rather by a spirit of envy and futile resentment. Because that's what Latin Americans are all about, resentment. They resent America's progress and prosperity, and they always attribute it to, oh, America's always stealing. No, a thief does not prosper the way America did. It can't, because the money will always run out. So that's not why America prospered. Okay, so let's continue reading here. Cursed be those who defend the unrighteous and condemn the righteous. The truth is against you, and the truth shall cast you down and cut you asunder. And it's kind of ironic because these words that were directed at Chile ended up being directed at America now, because just like Latin America died in 2003, these words were written barely a year and a few months after the death of Latin America and the divorce that the truth had with Latin America. And now these words are being directed at America now, because America also divorced the truth. And it's interesting that the wording that we felt led to write to use here, that the truth prompted us to use, because it says, and the truth shall cast you down and cut you asunder. Isn't that exactly what happened to the bridge? The bridge was cut asunder. You know, it was like undercut, like someone coming coming at your ankles and undercutting you and making you topple over. That's exactly what happened to the bridge. That's exactly what happened to America. And the conservatives still don't get it. They're still, you know, singing the Star Spangled Banner and proud to be Americans and hip hip hooray, go Founding Fathers, go. And they don't get that it's all over. And they will never get it, I don't think. They will get it someday, but by then they will be dead and it will be too late. So the fact that this ship failed an inspection or had inspection issues in Chile points to all of this. It's not a coincidence. The divorce from Latin America and now the divorce from America. And this word that we are sharing from the website where these recordings are posted was posted on the 19th of November. 19. And that's another thing. America died at the age of 19, as we've tried to explain before. It never reached, it never came out of its teenage years. We stayed a teenage nation the whole time. We never matured. And we stayed with old juvenile paradigms and never matured into a full real nation. So it's not a coincidence that this word was posted on a 19th of November. November is the 11th month. 11 is the number of judgment of 2004. And the place where this inspection happened was San Antonio, Chile. And interestingly enough, there was a word we posted on the website just a few weeks after this Chilean divorce in Chile word. And it, let me see if I can find it here. Let me see. Yes, here it is. It's called, if you want to look it up, it's called Red Lights in the Sky. Red Lights in the Sky. Posted on the 21st of January 2005. So it was a few weeks after the other one that was posted in November of 2004. And more or less 2 months and 2 days. And in that posting, we talk a great deal about San Antonio, the name San Antonio. And if you read the posting, you'll see why. But and let me read part of what we said about this. The name Antonio is Spanish for Anthony, which according to a name origin site means worthy of praise. The word San is the word used in Spanish to refer to Catholic saints. Therefore, the name San Antonio speaks of the ministers inside the church system who subconsciously and sometimes consciously consider themselves to be of a higher spiritual caste than the regular, quote, believers, just because they hold a ministerial position. Again, this speaks of big brother Cain, who belittles his little brother Abel because of his, quote, seniority. The, quote, San Antonios in the church believe that they deserve the reverence and praise of their fellow believers because they hold a religious title. It's no wonder, therefore, that the sky is turning red with the truth's wrath over, quote, San Antonio. So that's what San Antonio represents. And we here also say there's a painting that is very popular among Catholics that depicts this San Antonio holding baby Jesus in his arms. As we've said before, then we start talking about how that represents, Christians who never matured, who are controlled maternally, who never grow. They're controlled like little babies because they never matured. And that's what makes them easily manipulated, and they can be carried to and fro by their, quote, San Antonios. And that goes back to what we were saying about 316 times 3. So that's what San Antonio represents, this elitist. And that's what Obaster represented, these elitists that came to make everything all right because they knew how to do things. You just had to submit and follow along. And that's why this whole inspection issue happened in San Antonio, Chile. Okay, so now that we've said all that, let's see how do we continue here. There was another the second inspection that had an issue with the Dali happened in 2016. So the first inspection that had an issue was in June 2023, on the month that was the 20th anniversary of the divorce of Latin America and the truth, and the discarding of Latin America. And then the other incident happened, the other inspection issue happened in 2016 in Antwerp, Belgium, where they found a deficiency in structural conditions of the ship. And if you go to the website where these recordings are posted, I said to myself, I know that we've talked about Belgium at length in some places. So I went to look it up, and it turns out that there are two articles or postings on that website where we talk about Belgium a lot, and then we barely mention Belgium again. And one of them was posted on the 19th, interestingly enough, of April of 2007, that long ago. And it's called something like, let me see if I can find it right now, Warm Treachery, if you want to look it up. Warm Treachery. And we mentioned Belgium a whole bunch. That's the posting where we mentioned Belgium the most in the almost 20 years that the website has been up. That was the posting where we mentioned Belgium the most 22 times. Literally, I just did a search here, 22 times. Divorce. Coincidence? I don't think so. And Belgium is, we talk about the American Belgium. Let me read parts of this here. As we've said before, Belgium represents the spirit or mindset of compromise in Europe, a mindset that enables the temporary victory of the Charlemagne spirit over the truth. Belgium, the truth's a remnant. The Belgium spirit of compromise in America is what's led to a civil war being decreed over America. Just like Belgium in the 1930s, America wanted to help the truth's allied remnant against Charlemagne's axis of evil. Key believers or key people in America, however, were unwilling to go all out in order to enable the revival of the land, and they pulled back their support in the last minute, leaving the remnant out on the porch. So, and this all has to do with you have to read the whole thing to get the context. But basically, we're talking about Belgium being a place of compromise that says we're going to go with the truth, and then at the last minute pulling back. And we said America had become a Belgium. And this, we were saying this in 2007, 16 years. We've been warning about the death of this country for a long time. And we kept saying all these great things that were going to happen if we submitted to the truth. But no, it was clear from the beginning that there were warning signs. Things are not going well. And America had become a Belgium. And then we say the treacherous treasurer. That's the title in this section, and the whole article or the whole posting is entitled "Warm Treachery." I don't remember why we used the word "warm." You know, as opposed to I think it was because of lukewarm, someone who's lukewarm, like halfway in, halfway out. Warm, not hot, but warm. Not cold, but warm. Warm treachery. And interesting, when I saw this before this recording, I said, oh, interesting, treachery. We've been talking about treachery over and over again in recent postings. And it's all just coming back, you know. We said this 16 years ago. 17 years ago, almost, to the day. Because this was posted on the 19th of April, 2007. And 17 years later, it's coming back. And being brought to the surface by this Dali collision, and then there's a section in this in this posting that says half good is no good, and again the lukewarmness, you know, like saying we want to be with the truth but not quite so much. Want to commit, but not to the point of making our founding fathers look bad, not to the point of making our pastors look bad, not to the point of making our American Christianity look bad, etc., 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 all these things. And that became a source of treason. And then the second posting where we mentioned Belgium a lot is one that that was posted a little earlier than this one, and it's called Stowaway. You know, Stowaway, Stowaway. It was posted on the 27th of August, 2006. And I always kind of like cringe a bit every time I see that date, 27th of August, because I was almost killed 1 year later to the day, the 27th of August, 2007. Some people wanted to, it was like a carjacking thing. They wanted to take my car. I was parking, and these two Hispanics came, one with a gun, and they pointed it at me trying to take the car. And I won't tell you the whole story because it was dramatic. I don't know how to explain it, but maybe, yeah, it's not the time to say it, but let me put it to you this way. If someone filmed the whole incident, it would look like a scene from a movie. I mean, that's how intense it was. Because I ended up driving on the sidewalk, almost running those two guys over. It was like the truth warned me of something that was going to happen, and one thing led to another, and the tables got turned, and instead of me running away from them, it was them running away from me. But they could have killed me. They could have shot at me and killed me. But amazingly, to this day, I'm so thankful and amazed that I'm alive, because they wanted to kill me that day. And I could have died on the 27th of August, 2007, which is almost 17 years ago, and I wouldn't be recording this. Two Hispanics wanted to kill me, and I, by mercy, survived. It was actually the 26th of August at night, but by that time I was living in London time. Too long to explain. But the thing is, but in London it was the 27th of August, so that's why I always see it at the 27th. And this was written exactly 1 year before that incident. And in this article called Stowaway, we mentioned Belgium 11 times. And 11 is the number of judgments. And let me just share one thing we said in that. And this this posting is about how the truth, the remnant, those who, the truth seekers, the small group, were being stowed away in a ship, figuratively speaking, to protect them. And now I see this as a sign. I don't know how to explain this. And based on what I'm about to read, I hope you see what I'm about to say, how it makes sense. We wrote this 17 years ago, in this case, almost 18 years ago. We wrote this. There's a difference, however, in the degree of influence that the spirit of divided compromise has over Europe versus America. While it can be said that America, quote, has become a Belgium, unquote, it can only be said that Europe, quote, has a Belgium, unquote. In other words, America has become a Belgium, Europe has a Belgium. And I hope you see the difference. That, quote, Belgian presence is working to delay the truth's work in Europe, but that delay is more a bump on the road than a major roadblock, as is the unfortunate case with America. We said this almost 18 years ago. And I believe that all this whole incident with the ship hitting the bridge and collapsing, destroying the ship after named after the man who wrote the national anthem of the United States of America. All of this points, and that the ship failed inspections in Belgium, or had a problem inspection in Belgium in 2016. Which was, 10 years after the writing of this article. All of this points to the hope that Europe still has a chance, lost as it seems. And I really hope that Europe will survive and that it will fulfill its calling. And this seems to point to that. That America has become a Belgium that collapsed and died. Europe has a Belgium that with problems, with a bump in the road instead of being a major roadblock, and that hopefully Europe will overcome that bump in the road and fulfill its destiny. And it's like the transfer, like that bridge collapse represents a transfer of all the hope from America back to Europe. See, what inspired the Star Spangled Banner? The battle of America against a European power, in this case Britain. And if there's any hope for Europe, it's all birthed in Britain, in the UK. The UK dies, might as well just erase Europe from the map. The UK separated itself from Belgium, when it did the Brexit thing. It separated itself from Brussels and Belgium and said, okay, we're not going to be tied to the Belgium mindset, the Belgium spirit of compromise. And that's where the hope is right now. But the national anthem written by Francis Scott Key was inspired by America battling a European power. And surviving. And now the fact that this bridge is collapsing is like a figure that victory was for naught, because now the calling and the promise goes back to the Europe that America was fighting against. If you see what I'm saying, it's like the anthem is a tribute of America prevailing over Europe. The bridge collapsing is saying America's victory or prevalence over Europe is gone. And now the hope is back in Europe, if you see what I'm trying to say. So that's what those two, that's what the Antwerp failed inspection points to. And there's so much more to say, but it's a little bit exhausting to say all these things. And this recording has run way too long, so we're going to stop it here, and we're going to continue, hopefully, if the truth allows it, in the next recording, and try to finish out the thoughts that we have. So many things to say, so little time, but I hope that you begin to get an image or a sense of what this whole bridge collapse represented. The collapse of the key bridge, and even the name is so meaningful, the key bridge. That's what America put its hopes in. This is the key bridge to get us to the promised land, and the truth just proved that no, it isn't. You were looking at the wrong bridge. There was another bridge that I had for you that was going to take you to the promised land. And you said, we don't like that bridge. We don't know that bridge. We don't care for that bridge. So let's go with this bridge. And boom, the bridge is gone. And America's gone. Thank you very much for listening.